It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 551 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great interview with Jeff Zanolati from Zed Comics Original. He's got a Kickstarter going on right now for Accidental Renegades, which is described this way. It's 36 pages of manga-inspired comic craziness about bumbling, superpowered mercenaries who unintentionally ignite a global revolution. We talk about how the book came to be. We talk about Zed Comics Original and Jeff's part in it. And this Kickstarter will conclude on Tuesday, September 13 at 8:38 EM Eastern Daylight Time. So be sure that you go to support it once you listen to our fun interview. There is a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Jeff Zanolati, the creator of a book that's now on Kickstarter called Accidental Renegades. And people get on me because I don't say this soon enough, but how you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Good. People get mad at me because I don't say when the project's going to end soon enough. I get involved in the story and I don't say when. But your Kickstarter, which you've already at this point already made your goal, so congratulations are due.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And thanks to everyone who backed it.
And it's going to conclude. This project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Tuesday, September 13, 8:38 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And of course, we're recording this a little early, so just so people know. But you've already got, now when we're talking, and I'm sure you'll have minutes more by the time this posts, you got almost 70 backers. And you are literally, well, the goal was $1,500 and you're almost $800 past that. I'm sure you're much more beyond that by the time this posts, which is great stuff. And you were telling me before we started recording, this is your first Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's my first Kickstarter. And a lot of the way that it was managed kind of was based on the fact that it's my first Kickstarter. It is a relatively conservative goal. $1,500 in Kickstarter land is not necessarily that high. It is also a much longer Kickstarter than in hindsight I probably needed, but I'm the kind of person that I would rather learn the process as I go. And in order to do that, you kind of have to give yourself enough time. So the good news is I funded fully in about 11 days, with still plenty of time to go. But I guess if there's any bad news, it means I have to continue to manage this Kickstarter for, you know, at least another month.
You get to do but I always call the Kickstarter refresh, where you refresh, refresh. And then nobody touches it for a couple of hours. And you start to think, that's it. Nobody else is going to back my project anymore. And I always see people kind of gasping and fretting over those kinds of things. But the good news is you got plenty of time. The bad news is you got plenty of time.
Exactly. That's exactly what I say.
So you're going to get things done. Now, but first of all, let's talk about you describe yourself on the Kickstarter page as a veteran, a teacher, and an indie comic book creator. I don't make comics for a living, but I live to make comics. I'm always curious when I run into a veteran, which armed services were you in?
I was in the Army for 20 years.
20 years? Wow. Okay. Well, congratulations. Thank you for your service.
Always Thank you.
I'm always interested when I run into, because somewhere in my head, I got this thing where I thought that veterans and comics didn't mix. You know, veterans are very, you know, you're performing functions that don't require a lot of creativity a lot of the time. But I guess what the truth of it is that after all that army type stuff, you need a creative outlet. And that's maybe where comics came in.
Yeah, I think that definitely plays into it. I think it definitely plays into my storytelling aesthetic, if you will. I've always been a fan of comics for as long as I can really remember. I have one of my first earliest comic book memories was, you know, being a young kid in the, you know, early 80s being sick and my father coming home from work and had a couple of comic books that he probably bought at a newsstand at the train station. And, you know, I remember reading them and kind of being influenced by them and inspired by them and really kind of was passionate about that particular medium. So for the longest time, I would just draw my own characters and you know, my own, you know, ideas or, you know, my own fan art of existing characters, but I never really progressed with it because I was probably consumed with my day job, which was, you know, being in the military. But I do think that, like you said, you definitely need to have a creative outlet, especially if your job is very regimented. But I also think one thing the military does well that it doesn't publicize well is the idea of making its personnel as well-rounded as possible. It doesn't just necessarily want, you know, robots who obey orders. They want that, but they also want people who have critical thinking skills and can look at a problem creatively. And I think an artistic side definitely helps you in that military endeavor.
Now, the interesting thing about this is you do the whole package. You do the writing, the creation of the art and the lettering, don't you? You do, and the coloring, you do everything, right?
Yeah, I kind of do it all. It was, you know, kind of my labor of love. And because of that, I've kind of put all of myself into all facets of the work.
Okay. Well, that's good because, you know, I always, when I talk to people who do more than one level of it, which one is your favorite? And they usually tell me, I don't have a favorite. I'm a storyteller, so I do it all.
Well, I will tell you that I think for me, the favorite is the artistic side, is the drawing side. I find that to be more therapeutic. I definitely enjoy the idea of getting through the process, solving the process as you go through it and ending up with something at the end. But I think I would also, if I was being honest, tell you I'm probably more efficient and stronger as a writer than I am as an artist. I tend to be a little bit slow with the art, and that might be because of my approach to it. But I am probably more efficient as a writer, but definitely I enjoy the art side more.
Okay. I got to tell you something. A writer can write a page in a minute.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And an artist could take weeks to draw that. I mean, you can say the building exploded. Page done. And I guess the artists and stuff, whenever I talk to people who are artists, they always say, well, yeah, we've got the hard part. You know, we have unlimited special effects budgets, but the bad news is we have to create it and make it. It has to get in your head before you put it on the page. So I have never seen anybody who does both who says that they are better at the art than they are in their writing. So you're in good company.
Well, that's good to know. At least I'm not the only one.
There's lots. And I always get a huge kick out of that because people just love you know, when I was a kid, I used to draw comics, but of course my talents aren't nearly where yours are. And I just always loved to be able to create stories and stuff like that. The bad news with me, and you're obviously going to do something better, is I always tend to do things that come up kind of dry at the end. You know, I can tell you what makes a good story when I read something. That's a good story. But coming up with that, that's not where I function all that well. I'm sure you do much better at that.
Well, I'm trying. That's for sure. Definitely giving it my all.
Well, good, good. So how long have you been creating comics then?
Officially, like as a serious thing for about a year now. I actually did – my first comic book was a self-published affair that I did in conjunction with Free Comic Book Day in 2021. It was a one-shot called The Troublemakers about an internship for aspiring supervillains. And really more than anything, as the pandemic hit and we had a lot of free time and you know, we really couldn't do anything, I wanted to dedicate that energy into something productive. So I said, I want to get a book in the stores for Free Comic Book Day. And that really taught me the importance of staying on a schedule and maintaining a schedule and then getting the book to the printers, getting it back in time to be delivered to the store. So it was really kind of a rush to see my work on the shelves, but it also taught a lot of invaluable lessons about how to get the work done on time. And if, you know, something needs to be sacrificed in order to make your deadline, what that might need to be. And there's, for a lot of artists, I think that's a very difficult thing to do because of the level of personal impact you put into your work. You don't want to shortchange any of it, but some of it needs to get done on time, and it may not necessarily be perfect. And that's a difficult lesson, I think, for a lot of artists to really kind of wrap their arms around.
So you're a teacher. You might want to teach a lot of artists that, because there are many artists who don't understand that principle.
Right. And I'm definitely one of them. I didn't understand that at first until I came to the realization, and I had a very strict schedule, and I followed it as closely as I could. And one of the things that I realized was if I take another day, just one more day, to get this panel just a little bit better, I potentially can miss the print deadline, and that means I won't get in the store in time. So there comes a time where perfect is the enemy of good enough, and you have to get things good enough to get into the reader's hands. And an interesting article that I read once was an interview with one of the Kubert brothers. And one of the things he mentioned is, if you don't get that panel exactly right where you want it, that's okay, because if you're in this for the long haul, you're going to have plenty more panels, plenty more opportunities to do it right. So rather than getting so wrapped around that one thing, understand that this is a long game and you'll have plenty of other opportunities to make that play.
That's great. That's great. Now, this book is 36 pages long, as I read on the Kickstarter page.
Yes.
So, okay. So how long have you been working on it? You said you've been... This is your second book, as I understand it.
Yes, this is my second book, first crowdfunded book, and it's the first issue in a new series.
Okay. So how long have you been working on this issue?
This issue, I want to say I've probably been working on it now for about, from beginning to end, from scripting to where I'm at now, probably about 3 months.
Okay, wow. So this was after the ash can, wherever that was done.
Yes, after that, I took a little bit of a break and wanted to kind of refine the overall plot of this story to get it kind of where it was. And like anything else, it changes a little bit over time as I go through it. And mostly it's just refinements and details that get tweaked. But, you know, the thing that doing that one shot taught me was that, I guess the biggest lesson is that I can do this. I have for the longest time wanted to create a comic book, but always had an excuse. I'm not good enough. It's not the right time. I'm too busy, blah, blah, blah. And I kind of came to this epiphany, and it was my own moment where I realized that at the end of the year, I'm going to be a year older. I'm either going to be a year older having created a comic book, or I'm going to be a year older having not created a comic book. But one way or another, that year is going to pass. It's just a matter of what I produce at the end of it. So that was kind of my wake up call to get this work done. And you know, when I look at the Troublemakers now, I look at that one shot, there's plenty of things in it that I'm not happy with and I would love to do differently. But the good news is on this book, I have that opportunity. So I looked at a lot of things that I didn't know as far as storytelling, and I've refined that skill. And I am already much happier with the work I'm doing on the second book compared to the first one. But I think that's also true of your first attempt at anything.
So many people say that, if you don't tell people what you would like to change, or that you would like to change something, the rest of us won't get it. We won't understand that, because one of my very favorite all-time TV shows was Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And one of the writers, Ron D. Moore, would come on and he would say, oh, we didn't like such an episode. There were so many things we wanted to do differently. And the rest of us would go, what? We love that episode. What are you talking about? And so he got to the place where he stopped saying that. So I kind of feel the same thing with this. You know, as long as you're happy with it and you put it out, it's got your name on it, I think most of us will be like, oh, that was pretty good. That was
we liked it. Yeah. I've gotten some pretty good feedback from some of the sample pages already, and that's always encouraging. But I know that there's still a lot more story left to tell.
Are you self-publishing this?
I am going through Comics Wellspring. So I'm going through a company. I'm not doing any of the work after the book is finished on my own. I'm outsourcing that to the people who know better.
Okay. So that's, I'm trying to think how this works. So do you know when the book is actually going to be printed and distributed?
The digital copy should be out in the hands of people by November. And then assuming that the print lag is, you know, a few weeks, I'm expecting that the first print copy should start to go out in December, January.
Ooh, that's a good time for books to come out, actually, around
the
holidays.
Yeah, that's how I kind of aimed it as well. You know, digital copies are a little bit different. The way the tiers work, some of the tiers include, a hand-drawn unique sketch, and some of those are going to take a little bit of time as well. So I think the Kickstarter has December and January as the target dates. And based on everything I've been working on right now, I don't see any reason why those should not be an issue, as long as there's no issues with, you know, paper, supply chains, or anything that cannot be controlled.
Right. Those are things you don't have any control over, sadly. So they'll have to be. So a couple of things before we get into the book itself. Why are you calling your company Zed Comics Original?
Well, it's kind of interesting. When I first started on this path. I wasn't sure if the right way to approach it was as myself, as Jeff Zanellati, as my name, or as a brand. So what I essentially did was I decided to create a brand because I felt like that goes better on social media and gives you the opportunity to kind of create a brand. You know, I have a label. I picked Zed Comics Original. I originally had, I think it was just Z Comics, and somewhere along the line that Instagram got hacked and I lost the name. So I went to the next level, which was Zed Comics, which is basically the same thing, and branded that as, you know, Zed Comics Original. It's just I like the sound of it. I kind of ran it by a couple people and they said, yeah, that sounds cool enough. And so that's kind of what I went with. So now it's got the brand, it's got the logo, it's got all that stuff. And anything that comes out after Accidental Renegades can kind of fall under the Zed Comics Original umbrella. What, you know, another person kind of referred to as the Zediverse, like that overarching world.
Right, right. Because they always say in comics, it's better to have A or Z. A's will show up at the beginning of the list, or the Z's will be at the end. The middle stuff gets kind of lost. So you've actually gotten towards the end. So people, when they get towards the end, will say, oh, Zed Comics. Okay.
Yeah, there
good.
It is. Yeah. Check it out.
That's what I've been looking for. So that'll be good. So that's kind of fun stuff to do. So that'll be coming out. Now, I always do this at the end. Maybe we'll do it now because some people get mad at me because I do it at the end. If people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
Well, the easiest thing to remember is Zed Comics Original. It's Zed Comics Original on Instagram. It's Zed Comics Original on Facebook. The website is zedcomicsoriginal.com. The email is zedcomicsoriginal@gmail.com. The only exception is on Twitter. I'm there as the letter Z Comics Original because Zed Comics Original was just two letters too long to fit as a Twitter username. So if, you know, the people listening remember Zed Comics Original, they can pretty much find me on Instagram, Facebook, website, email, and then Zed Comics or Z Comics Original on Twitter. And those are really the socials that I use the most.
Which one is the one you update the most?
I update I update them equally an amount. It's just they get updated differently. I probably am on Twitter more because it allows for more interaction with members of the independent comics community, really more so than I think Instagram or Facebook does. But Instagram and Facebook is, you know, where I'll often put out information that is just more, you know, photographs or pictures, whereas Twitter allows a little bit more engagement. So I'd say if I'm on anyone more, it's Twitter, but not by that much.
Okay. All right. Because I'm a Facebook guy myself. I guess that shows my age. People say, you're on Facebook. You're old. I go, well, I keep up with everybody. Everybody I know is on Facebook. So that's why I like
it. Yeah. And it's funny. I've gotten a decent amount of Kickstarter traffic from Facebook, but I get very little interaction on Facebook, which, you know, seems strange. The direct interaction with fans, it's usually the same five or six people that like a lot of what I put out. And that's awesome, but it doesn't really have that far of a reach. On Twitter, it seems like, again, probably because the interactive nature of Twitter is a little bit different. It definitely supports more, you know, of a diverse group of people getting feedback, whereas Facebook, it tends to be the same core dedicated group of fans.
Which you want sometimes.
Right, which are great, which are absolutely great. And I would never, you know, I wouldn't trade them for the world. But, you know, it's hard to get a wide swath when you only have a small number of people really interacting.
Well, I'll say my one complaint about Twitter, and then we'll get into your book. If you don't read Twitter within 20 minutes, your post rolls over. Because there's so many things. And so I tend not to do Twitter because I can't say that. I do put stuff out on Twitter, but it's the one I get the least feedback from because I just don't think that I don't think people see it enough in quick enough of time. You got to be on there right as I post it or you're not going to see it. So, oh well. That's what everyone has its strengths and its weaknesses. So we have to.
Yeah, absolutely. And each one has its own algorithm peculiarities that you have to be able to know. And sometimes they're hard to understand.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of them I never figured out how to use. So I just don't. So, all right, let's get to Accidental Renegades. Now I noticed on the graphic on the top of the page, you have like a parentheses around accidental.
Yes.
Is that because on the in the text you don't have that? So is that which way is the right way to do it?
Well, I think the right way, just for ease of understanding, is without the parentheses. But I feel like on the cover, the parentheses make a lot of sense because it highlights the fact that these are individuals that are responsible for making big changes in the world, and they want nothing to do with it. What makes this character, this group of characters, different from a lot of other superhero or you know, heroic style books is that in those books, they almost always start with a group of individuals who either are heroes or want to be heroes. And what this does is it kind of takes that trope and inverts it, where this is a group of individuals who never wanted to be heroic. They just had heroism kind of forced upon them, and they have to respond to this newfound notoriety when all they wanted to do was be left alone. So they're renegades in that they're changing the world, but they're accidental in the fact that it was not something they ever sought out.
Okay. I got to read a little of this stuff because you get your writing skills come in here. It says, accidental renegades puts the fun in dysfunctional. I always remember when the Joker said, when Harley Quinn told Joker on the animated series, you put the fun in funeral. So I always loved those kinds of jokes. That was a great one. A group of bumbling, superpowered mercenaries try to make ends meet, going from one misadventure to another, only to wind up as the unexpected figureheads for a global revolution. How can they avoid the agents of a corrupt government when they're the most infamous people alive? Infused with a savory manga flavor and definitely rated PG-13, and I'll say, boy, that's true. Accidental Renegades has it all. An apathetic war hero, a Hindu ninja vampire, I haven't seen that before, an alcoholic alien, a cyborg with a heart of gold, a woman with a mysterious secret, and a BDSM candy sex palace. I haven't seen that in comics very much either. So that, then the last one here, I have to get a kick out of this last paragraph. Says, accidental renegades is the bastard love child of a Quentin Tarantino threesome with One Piece and the A-Team while tripping on shrooms. What's not to love about that?
Okay, that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, it makes me laugh about that. So I got to read some of the pages and some of the artwork. Now, you go into the characters a little bit there. So I thought what we would do is also go down the characters as well. Do you want to describe them, or do you want me to read something and then you can bounce off of that? What would you prefer?
I can describe them. Yeah, I'll give kind of the shorthand version.
Okay.
One thing kind of before I kind of get into that is, I took a lot of the comics that have always kind of resonated with me. And as I get a little bit older and my comics background gets a little bit more extensive, I find that I resonate more with stuff that's eclectic, whether it's the artists or the story, stuff that's a little bit off the beaten path. So some of the books that have really inspired me are books like Saga, The Umbrella Academy, Next Wave, which came out with from Marvel several years back. You know, I Hate Fairyland, those sorts of books that take kind of a totally different spin on the superhero story are the ones that kind of inspire this. And that's a lot of times where the ideas that went into the Accidental Renegades came from is, what can I do that really not only hasn't been done before, but has been done before, but still makes a lot of sense. And that's where some of those ideas came from. Now,
cool. Mm-hmm.
This is a group, like I said, they are reluctant heroes in every sense of the word. Their leader is a character named Spitfire. He's an old war veteran. He's, you know, been through a lot, and his goal in life, he just wants to live peacefully. He wants to live out his days earning a living, doing what he wants to do and being basically left alone. He's that get off my lawn kind of guy who just wants to do what he wants to do and doesn't want to be bothered by it. He's done a tremendous amount of service to his country, and now he wants to just relax. So I can definitely associate with that a little bit, although this is definitely not a character that necessarily represents everything I believe, but it's definitely representative of a lot of people that I know who have served their country and just want to be left alone. So
now you said old. How old is Spitfire?
Relatively old. And when I say old, I don't mean he's old. I mean his kind of, he's an old soul. His attitude is definitely old. He's definitely got that grumpy old man attitude without being a grumpy old man.
Okay, very good. And he's when I look at him in the picture, he's a great big tall guy. Looks like he's a diverse character with orange hair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's him. Okay, so that he's the leader of the group.
Yes. He's the I guess the de facto leader. He's the one that you know, because of his experience, has been kind of given the responsibility of taking charge. And again, his entire driving factor is he wants to be left alone. He wants to live his life. And his challenge becomes, how is he able to do that when he has notoriety that he never asked for?
Does his military background help him when it comes to being in charge?
A little bit, yeah. It definitely comes out. One of the themes that I look to address in Accidental Writings, and there are several themes like, you know, equality, diversity, you know, basic human decency. But one thing that is kind of addressed is, you know, the treatment of veterans, both in their social status and also their mental and physical health issues. That's something that I feel like is worth telling in an allegory of a comic book character.
Cool. That's very good. So he's the leader. Now, the next one on the page is Kali. Talk yes. about her.
So Kali is the kind of the bruiser of the group. You know, she's the one who answers questions with her fists, but she also has a dark secret. You know, she's been fighting a darkness within her, and every day that she fights for the group, she's also kind of fighting the demons, you know, inside. And she finds herself kind of on a razor's edge between being able to overpower her demons or having her demons overpower her. And I think that's relatable to a lot of people that are going through issues or have problems, that every day is a struggle, regardless of what that struggle is. And just getting through that day is a small victory in and of itself. I think this character will resonate with a lot of people.
So she's the woman with the mysterious secret.
No, that's actually that's a character that is not in here, because that character's really kind of central to the plot, and I didn't want to give away too much about her yet.
Okay, so she's the Hindu ninja vampire?
She's the Hindu ninja vampire, yes.
Okay, I want to make sure I get my people straight, because she's kind of – when I see her, she's obviously got the darkest skin with an outfit that sort of looks a little Hinduish, because she's got skulls on her – on this thing she has around her neck. So
yes.
Yikes. So she's a busy girl. So she is, she kind of like the second in command, or is just, where's her rank? You know what?
I'm not really sure if I would put her as the second in command. I think the next character we'll talk about is Mecca. Mm-hmm. Based on where the story's going, I think what we'll kind of come to the consensus is that Mecca is probably the second in command as far as his experience and his background.
Okay. Talk about Mecca then.
Okay. Well, Mecca was the guy who, you know, when he was younger, suffered some serious injuries, and he's in a suit of armor basically that helps keep him alive, but it also gives him, you know, a tremendous amount of firepower. He's the character that because of what happened to him and the way he was treated, has every reason to be angry at the world. But he's the character who, no matter what, always tries to approach problems with a smile. So he kind of represents that person in your life who, no matter how bad things get, is always there with a smile. So if, you know, we say Spitfire is the brains of the operation and Kali's the fist of the operation, Mecca would definitely be the heart of the operation. He's the one that has every reason to be angry, but yet never really succumbs to that.
Now, he in the picture, he's the one with the green and yellow armor.
Yeah, he's the one in the gigantic armor, yeah.
Okay, very good, very good. So it's interesting. Now, is he... of course, that's a guy. So, okay, so we're keeping the balance straight here on that. So, Mecca, that's interesting. That's so interesting because kind of like Cyborg and the Titans, he tended to be the heart of the Titans too. So, there's something about mechanical characters that actually are the heart that I find really interesting.
Yeah, I find the dichotomy of like stripping away a character's humanity and then that making them more human to be really, really interesting. And this was actually a character... kind of a little peek behind the curtain, who originally started out as being more robotic, like his speech patterns, his way of identifying problems was almost kind of like, if you remember Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator, where he had the options of answers, you know, he was almost like, you know, his response to a question was almost, you know, answer, colon, and then he would give the answer. He was very, very robotic. And I realized that individual character isn't interesting, and it's certainly not relatable. But a character that, you know, faces problems with the smile is relatable. And it is something that I think from a reader's perspective is much more interesting than just a literal robot. That's a dime a dozen.
Okay. Next one is Eclipse.
Yes. Eclipse is your alcoholic alien. He is an individual, you know, he's got tremendous amounts of power, but he also has a tremendous amount of problems. And his problems keep getting in the way of him really reaching his full potential. And the question that the reader is going to be indirectly asked as we go through the story is, at what point does he become more trouble than he's worth to this team? And how does the team respond to that? So he's a character who has, again, a lot of problems. He just handles them much, much differently in a much more self-destructive way. and the team has to address that or risk falling apart.
Is he the one that's gray with white hair?
Yes. Yeah, he's the one coming out of his little teleportation pool.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's good to see. All right, and that's good to know that. Now, those are the four you have outlined. You know, you mentioned there's one that's not in here because it has something to do with story, which we'll find out when we read it. Are there other characters, too, besides just those four?
Yes, you're actually going to – in the first issue, you're going to be introduced to a few characters. You're going to be introduced to a character, if you were to scroll down, called Time Bomb. He's an individual who kind of serves as your introduction to the world. So, you know, provides the reader with the understanding that this fictional universe is different from the one we occupy. And he kind of explains that. There's a team of bounty hunters that appear to create, at least in the first arc of the story, the foil to the Accidental Renegades, the people who are trying to bring them to justice. We're going to meet a candy themed crime boss who will utilize the services of the Renegades and kind of drives them along the first chapter. So if there's a kind of a MacGuffin that pushes them through the story, it's kind of brought on by the crime boss. They're you know, doing work, trying to complete a task that the crime boss is putting them on. So there's a lot of diverse, very interesting, very unique characters that come out in the first issue. Some of them just for a short period of time. Some of them are going to be long standing foils for these characters, but I think it's going to be interesting to the reader the amount of different things that they're going to see that really enrich the world.
Yeah, keep us guessing.
That's right.
I like to know. Now, before we get too far into this, there's another drawing underneath that says villain concept designs for issue one. There's four characters there. Are those characters that appear in the first issue?
Yes, those are the those characters will appear in the first issue.
Do you want to talk about them, or should we wait until we get the issue on that?
I won't go into too much detail because I don't want to ruin that, but I will say that it's a quartet of characters, kind of embodying a lot of your traditional team-related groups. You've got, you know, the big woman on the left. She's the, you know, the bruiser of the group. You have the leader in the middle. On the far right, you have the beautiful femme fatale, and then you have the wild card. In this case, it's a psychotic clown with a gigantic mallet. So in my opinion, anytime you can put a femme fatale and a psychotic clown in the same photo, you know, you should definitely take advantage of that.
Okay. All right. Then we get to see some sample pages, which are black and white. Now, you were telling me before we started to record that there's going to be some color sporadically in the book. It's not just all going to be black and white. Talk a little bit about that, would you?
Okay, so when I kind of really started work on this, for several reasons, I decided to go primarily in black and white with screen tones or zip tones, depending on what, you know, era you're from. You probably refer to them as different things. One is because it definitely has a manga aesthetic that I find very appealing. I not only the energy and the kind of eccentricity of manga, but also the overall visual aesthetic I find very appealing, and I definitely want to make this book reminiscent of that. So it has a manga flavor in it, and part of that is the fact that it's black and white. But what I also wanted to do was put a little bit of color in it in service to the story. Nothing that is over the top, but stuff that accentuates certain parts of it as we go through the story. So not every page is necessarily going to have color, but the pages that do, the color is going to really kind of make sense. And each issue is going to have almost like a theme in the way that the color is being used. So that is from more of a personal preference and artistic decision. From a more realistic and almost business decision is the fact that I'm doing all of this myself, and coloring is probably the thing that takes me the longest and is the most difficult for me to do. So by doing limited color, not only do I come up with something that I think looks better, but also something that I can do quickly and more efficiently, which allows me to make the rest of it better. So part of it is my personal preference. Part of it is a smart decision. And then part of it is because I think at the end of the day, the product is better for it.
Are you going to like put all the colors? Because, you know, as somebody who's been involved in the printing process, I know that you have to lay out your pages certain ways. And sometimes you can print certain pages only black and white. But if you've got color on other pages, you kind of want to make sure that the color pages lay together so that you save money on that. Are you doing that this time, or are you basically going to have color kind of wherever you'd like it to be?
For this, I'm going to do color kind of wherever it fits. And, you know, was able to, you know, at least based on initial pricing, doing a color book is not cost prohibitive. The Kickstarter is doing well enough that it's going to be able to support it financially. And then what I really am kind of picturing this is the first issue is going to, you know, make sense on its own. The second issue is going to make sense on its own. Third issue is going to make sense on its own. But when you package them all together in an arc and you were to flip through it, all of a sudden now the colors would make much more sense put together. So if you almost think of it as the first episode of a show is okay, the second of a show is okay, the third episode, but when you put them together, like, okay, now I understand what they're going for. And I think it works better that way.
Okay, sounds good. So that's looking good. Like we said, you've already, let me mention it again, it's under Accidental Renegades on Kickstarter. As we're talking, you've already gotten past your goal of $1,500. And again, the project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Tuesday, September 13 at 8:38 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. People get mad at me because I don't say that enough, so I'm going to make sure I get it in there.
I appreciate it.
So now you've got sample pages, and then you've got the different levels, which are kind of fun. There's the Digital Renegade, which is a $7 pledge. There's the Official Renegade, which is $15 or more. Then the Exceptional Renegade is $35, and one of them is already gone. The Commercial Renegade, which was $50, that one had digital issue number one, your name printed on the appreciation page, a signed physical issue, unique character sketch from Zed Comics, your likeness, oh boy, it's too bad that's gone. I always like that. Your likeness or logo drawn into issue number one. Boy, how about that? I only had that done once. One time I could afford it. And I ended up being on a Moby Dick was a zombie.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And I was on the ship. And
It was really, really interesting. And I'll tell you, I didn't – in hindsight, one of the lessons that I'll know for the next Kickstarter is how popular this tier was. And I don't think I really fully accepted how popular it would be. If you go back and look, this book almost funded 100% just on this tier alone. This tier was really, really popular. Oh, wow. And, you know, I think I talked to a lot of people and they said, well, you know, $50 is really affordable for what you're getting. But also, I think a lot of people really like you said, the opportunity to see themselves or their logo in a comic book. But the problem was, as I started looking at a lot of this, I was like, man, this is like an alien world with very eccentric characters. I'm going to have a lot of middle-aged white guys in this book if I continue, you know, with all these people. And I was like, I almost feel at some point that this tier's success is going to start to make the story suffer. And I just frankly wasn't comfortable doing that. So I capped it at the end of July. And, you know, I'm glad I did because I think it was the right thing to do. I would love to be able to have more of the highest tier pledges, but I've already met the goal. I'm at 155% funded right now with about a month and change to go, at least from now. So as far as a measure of financial success, I mean, I've hit that. I want the people who back this to make sure that they get the best product. And then another thing that I was very cognizant of doing is on every single level, whether it's the lowest level or the highest level, that individual will get their name printed in the appreciation page of the book. And I've seen some Kickstarters where you have to reach a certain tier in order to get to that. And if that's how those individuals want to manage it, that's 100% up to them and no shade or anything. They manage their Kickstarters the way they want. But for me, I know if you're going to give me your money for this book, I don't care if it's the lowest tier or the highest tier. I'm going to appreciate that equally. And I want to make sure that I have an opportunity to give those people a small thank you, you know, in a page, the appreciation page of the book. So whether it's the digital tier for $7, the commercial tier for $50 or anything in between, I'm appreciative of that. This is my first time doing this. Anyone who's a fan of me, I'm automatically a fan of them, and I want to take an opportunity to thank them for that. And that's what I did.
Well, when I got my picture, I actually – see, I always look at those levels, and I've often wanted to do them. I've seen them go for hundreds of dollars. And so the one time the Moby Dick one was the one where it was $80, and I said, I can afford that. So I went ahead and bought that one. I got into that, so I was really happy. Though I have to say, the creator had to point out which one I was because I wasn't wearing
right. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, if I'm going to have to do that as well, because I feel like some of them will be pretty obvious. but especially for a couple of, you know, if I know the individual well enough, you know, I may take some liberties with their figure or put them in a situation that's, you know, interesting. And I may have to point out to one or two people. So hopefully that won't be too much of an issue.
Well, mine, I wear glasses, and so I didn't see anybody with glasses on the ship. And of course, he pointed out, said, well, look on this page, and there, oh, there I am. Okay, I got it. So I was real pleased. Believe me, it's like you said, so many of us comics fans would love to see us in a comic at some point. And so it's always a big special deal when that happens. So that's really great. How many people did you get that did that?
I'll go back and look, but I believe it was about 37.
Wow.
Yeah, and that is a pretty good number. Let's see. Oh, sorry, I apologize. 27.
That's still a good number, I have to say.
Yeah, 27. 27 people there. And that's, you know, the book, the way it just happens to the plot of the book played out, I felt like this really works as a tier because there's a lot of crowd scenes, there's city scenes, you know, there's a big, you know, you know, this extravagant party scene. So there's lots of opportunities to fit individuals into the book. But again, I, you know, have already kind of thumbnailed every single page out, and there's only so many places that I can fit other people in without it really starting to kind of mess up the flow of the story. So 27 is more than manageable. I know a couple of those are logos. I know a couple of those, the individuals were like, hey, whatever you want to do is awesome. You know, just make it cool. So there is a lot of flexibility, but anything more than that probably would have been a problem.
Okay, because and also while we're talking, you have hit your first stretch goal and you're on the verge of getting stretch goal number two at $2,500. There's only one more after that. It's $3,500. And now, the first one, you get a high-quality foil cover for all physical backers. The $2,500 is the exclusive Accidental Renegades and Zek Comics original stickers. And then the next one, the $3,500, is trading cards for all physical backers.
That's and I, you know, I'm really, even if we don't hit that tier, I think that's something I would like to take some time when this campaign is done before the second one kicks off to do the trading cards. I think that's kind of a throwback to my childhood. I've seen a couple indie comics creators who've done that with characters that are more slice of life, and it was still interesting. And I think doing it with a superpowered character where on the back you can have their stats and a little bit about their bio, I think is a really interesting and unique way to highlight a very large and diverse group of characters. So I'm looking forward to an opportunity to do that. Even if it doesn't get it on this Kickstarter, I'll probably put it together and then have it for the future.
Now, one thing I've got a question for, let's say people want to get the Troublemakers.
So what I'm going to do with the Troublemakers is because it was just a one shot and not a standalone story. What I'm going to do is when I'm done with this first issue of Accidental Renegades is do a small print run of the Troublemakers. And then with that, I'll have two books and I can table at local conventions and we'll have those books available for sale there. And we'll also look to get them on, you know, websites or perhaps on my website for purchase as well. So the Troublemakers is, you know, my first child, so it's the one you make all the mistakes on, but I would still like an opportunity to offer it up to people if they're interested.
What area do you live in so people can look for you at cons?
Right now I'm on Long Island, so the cons that I would go to would be kind of focused, at least right now, on the Northeast.
You're gonna be
I would
in New
love
York?
To get out a little further out, maybe, you know, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, you know, those areas primarily. I would love to be able to get out to some further cons, but in order to do that, I definitely want to have a little bit more of an established brand. I don't want to table at a con halfway across the country with, you know, one book. That seems like a waste of my time and the fans. So to be able to go out with a couple books, some stickers, some trading cards, have enough to make it, you know, worth someone's time is really my goal.
Well, if I can make a recommendation,
sure.
My very favorite Comic-Con, I live in Florida, but the one I love to go to the most is New York Comic-Con.
Yes. Yeah. I've been there once. That was an amazing time.
I've actually helped my roommate when we've been in Artist Alley, and people just seem to go there with lots of money ready to buy comics. we the first time we ever saw it, we had a comic. We sold out of that one on Sunday afternoon. We found some beat up copies. People even bought those. And we were like, really? You want to buy a beat up copy? Yeah, we'll take it. Okay, so, you know, and my roommate last year was there, and he did a good job selling then too. So Just amazing con as far as that goes. You get all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, I go there and I see those glasses with the imprints on them of Marvel heroes and stuff like that.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Everything in the world you could ever want is in that New York Comic Con. It's really good. And I love San Diego, don't get me wrong. And I love Dragon Con. Dragon Con is another wonderful convention in Atlanta. But New York is my favorite. That's when I, if somebody said, hey, you can go to only one con this year, what would it be? And I wouldn't even think about it being New York. New York's
yeah, I did New York Comic Con several years ago. I don't remember exactly how long ago it was, but you know, I brought you know my kids and my you know my youngest is just graduated high school, so they were young at the time, and I remember just being blown away by everything. And you know, I kind of tell the story to him, but you know, there's a time that we were there and we were walking around. And he was kind of cranky, and I'm like, hey buddy, like what's wrong? Why are you in such a bad mood? And he looks at me, he's like, I'm bored, okay. And I actually stopped. I stopped. I said, you're bored? I said, a man just walked by in a 12-foot robot costume. You cannot literally be bored here. He's like, well, I'm hungry. So, okay. Well, if you're hungry, I can fix that. We went downstairs and got him a churro, and he was fine. But, you know, I went just for a day. And I feel like it's so extensive that you almost a day doesn't do it justice. And if I go back, you know, if I go back as a fan, I would do it for a couple of days. If I go back and table, that would be amazing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I didn't go to any, you know, discussions. I didn't go to anything like that. I literally just walked around the floor, spent a lot of time at Artist Alley, kind of had a very minimal agenda of things I wanted to get, brought a couple of books I wanted to get signed. And the rest was just kind of taking it all in. And there's just so much stuff that it's impossible to see it all in a day, I think.
It's an amazing place. I have to say the main difference for me as far as San Diego and New York, if you go to San Diego, the entire downtown San Diego is taken over by the convention. There's some places take over restaurants, and it's like there was a pizza place that was the Cartoon Network pizza place.
Oh, wow.
That was on. And you could walk around downtown. There'd be people in costumes all the time, stuff like that. And honestly, it was so much that I actually got towards the end. I was going like, I think I want to go back to real life now. That's a lot. But in New York, if you go to New York, you go two blocks away from the Javits Center. They don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so different. It's so funny to me how different that is. But on the other hand, Dragon Con is a really good con in Atlanta. Where I was at we were in this one building. We were on the fourth floor, and the fourth floor was equal to what other cons have entirely. It was George Perez was there, and other people were there, and we had a booth that we were selling stuff at, and there were three levels below us that were all comic related paraphernalia. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was one building. There were three other buildings that had stuff in it. And parties go on there all weekend long, I tell you. It's Labor Day weekend, and it's fun, I do have to say. It was we had a good time while we were there. But that's another one of my favorite cons now as far as that goes. But you're in the right place if you can get into New York, believe me. It's worth it.
Yeah, and I know it's definitely a you know, an uphill battle to get a table at New York Comic Con from what I've at least seen from a lot of people, but it would be a great opportunity. And last year I didn't have enough to really make a splash, but I think by the next time it rolls around, I will. And I'm looking forward to a chance to be there.
I highly recommend it. Well, like I said, people were buying us out of stuff, and we were like, we'd never seen that before. So, I mean, people were going there with money, and they never heard of the comics and stuff before, and they were still buying it. And we were going like, wow, okay, we like this con. So I have to say, if you're local to that, boy, all the better. One of the most expensive things is to get living quarters for a couple of days.
Yeah,
and then transportation there.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's good. But let me tell you, it's so worth it. So worth it. And I always tell people, too, one other thing. If you go to a convention and you don't make money, that's okay. You might make connections, and you might run into people who can help you further down the road, and that'll be worth more than if you had made money.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely.
So I always tell people that. So it's Accidental Renegades, and once again, it's going to reach its goal. Of course, now I'm pretty sure we're going to get that by Tuesday, September 13th at 8:38 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And be sure to get in there and support Jeff and this is Steph, who does almost everything in this comic, except he doesn't print. It's the only thing he doesn't do. So be sure to get this 36 pages of manga-inspired comic craziness about bumbling, super-powered mercenaries who unintentionally ignite a global revolution. That'll be something to see. Really good. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun, and I can't wait to see this. And I think we're going to have to – now, when this gets done, are you going to actually do a second?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've already got the basic outline for the second and third issues mapped out. It's just a matter of going in and going page by page through the script. But I kind of have I start with the start and end of each issue, and that's already been done out to the third issue.
Boy, you plan well ahead. I wish other people could do that. There are some Kickstarters I have given money to that I have never seen.
Well, Wayne, I'll tell you, it's definitely going to, second issue two and issue three will definitely change a little bit as I go through them. But I have a very good idea of what's going to happen right now. And like anything else, you refine it as you go through it. But the beginning and the end is definitely set.
Well, it looks great. It should be lots of fun. And I always admire people who can do more than one aspect of the comic creation process. So it's really great that you're doing that. So do you know when those other Kickstarters will come?
Right now, I'm looking at probably starting the other Kickstarter, kicking off in February or March timeframe, probably closer to March, just to give myself a little bit of time to fulfill this current one, take a couple of weeks to catch my breath, and then get right back into it. So I'm anticipating right now, just based on my schedule, it'll probably be very late winter, very early spring, so March timeframe probably.
That's a great time to do a Kickstarter. People are paying more attention to their computers and stuff like that.
Right.
Once again, it's Accidental Renegades, and Jeff and Zed Comics are doing. You want to be sure to get there and get to it before Tuesday, September 13th at 8:38 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And once again, the name of your website?
It's www.zedcomicsoriginal.com. So zedcomicsoriginal.com.
All kinds of good stuff. You have character art and sequential art and all kinds of good things there. So it's lots of good things. Okay. There's some of the names of the villains. Okay. We won't spoil them here, I guess. But I see who some of those characters are. Okay. Very good. Very good. Well, Jeff, it's going to be great fun. I can't wait to see it. And, I look forward to you getting more stuff. Maybe sometime we'll bump into you at New York. That would be fun to do.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much for your time. This has been awesome. A big fan. I appreciate you having me on.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.